The Vintage Gamer, episode 33, Illuminati.
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
Hello, and welcome to The Vintage Gamer, the podcast that seeks out great games from an earlier era. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. Each week, I take a look at a game from the past, either a board game, card game, role-playing game, or computer game. And if you like what you hear, you can download more great episodes or even subscribe at www.thevintagegamer.net. And The Vintage Gamer is brought to you by Bob's Game Shack, where every night is bingo night. This week, Bob has a special on Simpsons chess sets. There are plenty in stock. Get yours for only $25. So, come on down to Bob's in lovely downtown Lizard Lick, North Carolina. So what is new at the Vintage Gamer in the past, well, 3 or 4 days? Really hasn't been that long since I've done a show, but I figured I'd get a few out since it's been a long time. A few bits of news that I didn't cover in the last episode. First of all, I had a recent appearance on the podcast Take Control of Podcasting on the Mac, done by Andy Affleck. I did play his promo. I thought I'd actually mention my appearance there. He and I sit down and talk a bit about audio equipment and what sort of audio equipment Mer and I use. So if you're interested in such things, go check it out. I will be making a personal appearance at BalticCon 42. I'll be participating in the new media track. I'll be doing a couple of audio plays, namely The Takeover, written by my wife, Mer Lafferty, and the latest installment of Lancelot Biggs, Spaceman, this time written by Jared Axelrod. And I'll be participating in a few other panels, some basic podcasting panels, and also, oddly, a panel about sexy women of sci-fi. I believe I'm qualified to talk about that, but I'm still not really sure why. Beyond Balticon, I'll also be attending Origins this year, as I have for many years in a row. This year, I'm actually participating as a member of the press, so you may see me running around with a hat with the word press written on it, sticking microphones in people's faces and generally making a nuisance of myself. I'll also be playing some games, too. And I'm sure I'll be doing a show between now and then, so I'll talk more about Origins when the time gets closer. And finally, this past week, my book, the one that caused me to not do vintage gaming for a long time, Essential Mathematics for Games and Interactive Applications, finally came out. You can buy a copy from Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It is, well, boiled down, it is the mathematics that I believe is necessary to write computer games these days. If you're interested, check it out. You might want to go to the Essential Math website and see what's there first. That's www.essentialmath.com. So with that news, let's take a break and get back and talk about Illuminati.
You've played World of Warcraft and loved it.
You've seen Lord of the Rings and it thrilled you.
Maybe you're a fan of Joss Whedon.
Maybe you read Anne Rice or Laurel Hamilton. Maybe you wish the worlds of Neal Stephenson
or Cory Doctorow could come true.
And you've started to notice
gamers.
Gamers are all around you.
They hide in plain sight.
Their dice bags tucked in their desk drawers.
You've seen them stumble into work on Monday morning with bloodshot eyes.
A look of triumph on their face.
You notice that they and their friends seem to have a secret language.
A special bond that nobody else shares. And now you want a piece of that.
Well, now you have a chance to join the ranks of role players all around the world.
Now you have the Square One Podcast. I'm Bill Walton of TheEscapist.com.
I'm Sam Chupp of the Bears Grove Podcast. Together,
we will take you, the absolute newbie gamer, on a voyage of discovery and learning.
You'll learn all about weird dice,
how to make up a character,
how to start your own gaming group,
and how to choose the game that's best for you.
And we do all of this without heavy jargon,
with links to resources, and with an eye to keeping everything nice and frugal.
So join us
so join us. Role-playing is hard to start,
but everything seems easier when you start at Square One.
Find out more about the Square One Podcast at squareonepodcast.com.
Welcome back. So why am I covering Illuminati, and why this day of all days? Well, the release date of this podcast is significant in the Illuminati canon. It is 523. 5 is the mystical number of Eris, goddess of chaos. And 2 and 3, well, they add up to 5. And thus, there's the special importance of the date, as well as, for some reason, the phrase 23 Skidoo. It's also the day Balticon begins, but that's probably a coincidence. Or is it? One never knows with the Illuminati. So before I talk about the game, I want to talk about who are the Illuminati. The official story of the Bavarian Illuminati is that they were founded in 1776. Strange date that. By Adam Weishaupt, a professor of canon law at the University of Ingolstadt in Bavaria. The exact purpose of the Illuminati is shrouded in mystery, hence their draw for conspiracy theorists, but some believe it was to enlighten, hence the name Illuminati, its members about the benefits of a rational society and teach them to do good. However, it soon became characterized as a dangerous secret society, whose true goal was to overthrow the established governments and religions of Europe and establish a new world order run by the Illuminati. These fears led the Duke of Bavaria to ban such secret organizations, and the Illuminati, in that form, soon faded out of existence. However, rumors continued that it was behind the American and French revolutions, and there was a small anti-Illuminati panic in the northern United States in the late 18th century. This notion that the Illuminati never really went away, and fear of its true goals led many people into believing that the Illuminati were the underlying force behind all conspiracies. Left-wing, right-wing, moon landing, Kennedy assassination, you name it. According to, quote, official history, this is, of course, nonsense. The truth behind the Illuminati was revealed in the brilliant research work Illuminatus, written by Robert Shea and Robert Anton Wilson, and published in 1975. Their cover story is that during their tenure as letter column editors for Playboy, they got a lot of letters about conspiracy theories. For a lark, or so the story goes, they decided to write a book tying all of those theories together into a grand conspiracy romp. Their so-called fictional work describes the battle between the Illuminati, agents of order and control, and the Discordians, agents of chaos and freedom. In this book, it is revealed that all the conspiracies of the world are in fact due to the Illuminati, and they have been around for much longer than the Bavarian Illuminati, dating all the way back to ancient Egypt, and appearing under different guises. Through their influence, common people are trained from an early age to be cowed by authority figures, and subliminal triggers, like the word Fnord, placed in a newspaper, can cause feelings of fear and alarm about the day's headlines. Does freedom win out? Well, looking at the world today, I'm not so sure. By the way, Umberto Eco, the guy who wrote Name of the Rose, he sort of wrote about these guys with his book Foucault's Pendulum. His protagonist came up with a wild conspiracy theory that turned out to be true, and were eventually chased down by the Templars, or maybe it was the Rosicrucians. Whomever it was, some say that Robert Shea disappeared from the world of Illuminati soon after the publication of the original book. Perhaps the Illuminati were involved. On the other hand, Robert Anton Wilson lived a long and publicly productive life. He wrote many other works involving the Illuminati and other conspiracy organizations, so maybe no foul play was involved. Maybe Robert Shea went on to write historical novels instead. Maybe. Now, let's talk about the game Illuminati. In 1981, Steve Jackson discovered the book Illuminati. Hang on a sec. Excuse me.
Hello? Yes, this is he. Who is this? Very funny. Very funny.
Apparently that was the Illuminati. Where were we? Oh, that's right. We were talking about the game. In 1981, Steve Jackson discovered the book Illuminatus. His cover artist, Dave Martin, suggests that he turn the book into a game. And Jackson soon decided that the plot was a little too freeform. Plus, he was concerned about the cost of game rights. So instead, he created a general game about conspiracies, many of which were, in fact, borrowed from the book. Initially, Robert Anton Wilson gave his blessing to this by writing an introduction to the first expansion, but in later years, it seemed he was a little annoyed by the loss of royalty money. I was first introduced to this game by my friend Paul when I was staying with him for a summer. At the time, we played a two-player, which now I don't really recommend. That's possibly why I didn't really think much of it at the time, but it did stick with me. And I suspect it had an unconscious influence on my game Politica. And today, it's one of my favorite games, particularly with a group about 4 to 6 people. In Illuminati, you play a core conspiracy organization known as, confusingly enough, an Illuminati. Your basic goal is to build a large enough network of groups so as to take over the world and prevent other people from doing the same. You'll do this by either attacking with your Illuminati or existing groups in your network. You'll either attack to control a group and bring it into your network along with any other groups that it has. You'll attack to neutralize a group to remove it from somebody else's network. Or you can attack to destroy a group and completely remove it from the game. In the original game, the Illuminati were the Bavarian Illuminati, of course, the Discordians, yes, the UFOs, the Servants of Cthulhu, the Bermuda Triangle, and the Gnomes of Zurich. Gnomes of Zurich being the Swiss bankers. The first and second expansions to the original game added the Society of Assassins and the Network, respectively, and then the Y2K expansion to Deluxe Illuminati added the Church of the Subgenius and Shangri-La. Now, groups are such things as the CIA, the Boy Scouts, Evil Geniuses for a Better Tomorrow, children's television programs, etc. Illuminati control groups, and groups can control other groups, called their puppets. Both the Illuminati and the groups are represented by cards. Each card has 1 to 4 arrows along one of the edges of the card. The Illuminati have 4 arrows, all pointing out. This indicates that they can control in all 4 directions. The groups have arrows that either point in or out and can have, as I said, 1 to 4 arrows. These arrows represent the flow of power through the network. So to build a network, you'll place a group card so that one of its power arrows lines up with an open arrow on your Illuminati card, or next to an open arrow on a group. Cards can be sideways or upside down, as long as the flow of power is aligned, i.e. the arrows point in the same direction, and the cards don't overlap. To succeed in the conspiracy business, you need power and money. The Illuminati and groups can produce both. Power is represented by a power score on the card. Higher is better. Some cards have 2 numbers separated by a slash. The second represents the power that can be transferred through the network to other groups. In this way, you can add up your power base to make a particularly effective attack with a group. I'll talk more about this later. The money that a particular group or Illuminati has is represented by a store of chips or chits on top of the card. A card can generate more money each turn if it has an income score. So the Illuminati has an income score, and then other groups can have or not have income scores. If a card doesn't have an income score, then you can move money there from another card as part of your turn. So every group can have a stash of cash. Groups have additional qualities. They have a resistance score, and this measures the defense of the group. And again, higher is better. And groups have alignments. Groups can be conservative or liberal, government or communist, straight or weird, peaceful or violent, or fanatical or criminal. The first four pairs are opposing alignments. For example, straights oppose weirdos. The last two are special. Fanatics oppose all fanatics, and criminals have no opposition. And I'll talk more a bit on what this means later. Finally, both groups in Illuminati can have special abilities that apply to either themselves or the network. For example, some give bonuses when attacking with that group, or defending that group, or the money you earn, or etc. For example, the Illuminati, the Bermuda Triangle, allows you to shuffle your network around, just move all the cards around, once per turn. This is a very powerful ability. Every Illuminati, by the way, has a special ability. It's just groups that may or may not have one. Beyond groups and Illuminati, there are two other card types. There are specials and artifacts. The artifacts were added in the latest expansion. Specials are just what they sound like. They are action cards that you hold in your hand and you can play at some opportune time, and they give you some brief special ability. Artifacts are kind of like special groups. You control them, but they don't make up part of your network. They don't have any arrows in or out. They just give you general special powers. With that summary, let me get into how you actually play the game. Hang on, I got a weird Skype message. Yes, okay. All right, now the Illuminati is trying to talk to me through Skype. Alrighty, well, let me just shut that down. Gameplay, right. At the start of the game, players will draw an Illuminati card at random, and then they'll take the initial amount of money indicated on the card. Then you deal out four cards from the top of the deck. If they're all groups, then they go into the center of the table. They're called uncontrolled groups. If there are any specials, then you stick them back into the deck and keep drawing until you have four groups. After that, gameplay begins. Each person does the following in turn on their turn. First, you get money. You will get money on your Illuminati and then on any other group that has an income score, and it's just placed on that card. The second thing you do is to draw a card. If it's a special card, then you keep it to be used at some opportune time, as I said. Or, if it's a group or artifact, you lay it face up in the center as, again, an uncontrolled group. Then you can do two what are called regular actions. And those actions are to attack. You can attack to control, to neutralize, or to destroy. You can move money around from one group to another, as long as they're adjacent. You can rearrange one group to move it somewhere else in your network, or you can give a group away. So let me talk about what each of these actions is, because this is pretty much the core of the game right here. So attacking. Let's talk about attacking to control first. The purpose of doing this is to add groups to your network. You can attack an uncontrolled group from the center, or you can try to attack a group in an existing network. You don't attack Illuminati. What you do is you pick either your Illuminati or a group in your network with an open outward arrow. If it's a group, then you can add in any transferable power from the network. From that, you subtract your target's resistance, the value will be on the card, and you'll get a base score to beat. Now, on top of that, there are some pluses and minuses. If the group is in somebody else's network, then they get some defensive bonuses depending on how close the group is to their central Illuminati card. So if it's right next to the Illuminati card, then they get a minus 10. If it's one step away from the Illuminati, then they get minus 5. If it's two away, they get a minus 2. Farther than that, there is no defensive bonus. There are also pluses and minuses depending on the alignment of the two groups. If the group you're attacking with and the group that you're attacking have the same alignment, then you get a plus 4 to your attack, there's maybe some connection there. The communists know all the communists, you know. But if they're opposing alignments, say if a weird group's trying to attack a straight group, then it's a minus four, because straights don't want to be anywhere near the weirdos. On top of all of this, the attacker can throw in some money from their Illuminati and the attacking group to add plus one to their score. So for each megabuck you throw in, you get a plus one. The defender can do the same thing, except that if the defender uses money from the group that's being attacked, then they get a minus two. If it's just from their central Illuminati treasury, then it's just minus one. Now, outside observers can participate too. It's called interference. And they can throw in money on either side from their central treasury and the Illuminati. The attacker can prevent this by discarding one of their special cards to make what's called a privileged attack that blocks interference. And there's a special card that counteracts that as well. The Bavarian Illuminati, their special ability is that they can spend $5 once a turn to make a privileged attack, so they don't have to discard a special card. There are some new rules that allow someone to discard two special cards to cancel a privileged attack. So you can play with that as well. Once all of this settles out, and there might be a lot of back and forth as someone throws in money, and then someone else says, oh, no, I'm going to throw in some more, and then someone else says, oh, no, no, I want to be part of this, and throws in some money. Once all of this settles out, the attacker will roll two dice. If the value is the same as the final score or lower, then the attack succeeds. What we're talking about right now is attacking for control. So on success, this means you attach the group to the group or Illuminati that you attacked with, and you can transfer some money from that group or Illuminati to the new group. In addition, if you are attacking somebody else's network, and that new group has groups attached to it, so puppet groups, you can attach those to your network as well, as long as you keep the connections the same, and they'll fit in your network without overlapping. Also, if they have money on those groups, you get to keep half of the money. So if you can pull it off, it really does pay to disassemble someone's network high up. A few more notes on attacking. Once the attacker throws in money, or really whenever anybody throws in money, the attacker has to go through with the attack. There is an opportunity for the attacker to withdraw, but once money's involved, they have to go in. Another thing is that a roll of 11 or 12 is automatic failure, so there really is no reason to spend money beyond that point, unless, of course, you want the opposition to throw in more money in order to bring that number down. It's a strategy. So let me just run through a quick example here. The Animal Testing Labs group, which is part of the Bavarian Illuminati, attacks the Cattle Mutilators group, and it's just a free group in the center. The Animal Testing Labs has a power of 1, plus the transferable power of 10 from the Illuminati, for a total power of 11. The Cattle Mutilators have a resistance of 6, so the base roll is 11 minus 6, or just 5. But the Cattle Mutilators are weird, and the testing labs are straight. These opposing alignments mean that there's an additional minus 4, so the base score is actually 1. Because of this, the Bavarian Illuminati decides to add in 7 megabucks. So now the score to reach is 8. So 1 plus 7, 8. He rolls a 6, which is a success, and so now he controls that group. And so he attaches the Cattle Mutilators to the testing labs. Seems somewhat appropriate. There are two other attacking possibilities. As I mentioned, you can attack to neutralize, which is, again, allows you to remove a group from someone else's network. And it just goes into the uncontrolled group pile. It's pretty much the same deal, except that the attacker gets a plus 6. Any cards that are attached to that group, that's kind of a sub-network, those also go into the unattached group pile. The third type of attacking is attacking to destroy, and this allows you to remove a group from the game. Again, very similar. There are two major differences. First of all, you get a +4 if groups are of opposite alignment, so straights are very good at wiping out weirdos, and you get a -4 if they're the same alignment. Also, now the defender doesn't use resistance, the defender uses power. One other thing is, because you're not trying to attack to control, the attacking group doesn't need an open control arrow in this case. As mentioned, the result is that the card is removed from the game. Any cards that were attached to it, again in a subnetwork, those become uncontrolled groups. They are not actually removed from the game. So those are the possibilities for attacking. The other three possibilities, as I mentioned, you can move money from one group to another, and basically you just take the chits from one group and move it to a neighboring group, and it doesn't matter which way the power arrow goes there. You can also rearrange one group, basically pick it up and then move it somewhere else in your network to an open control arrow. Again, you have to be careful there that the subnetwork that you're moving will actually fit. Any cards that don't fit, that you can't make fit, then you lose them. They go away. Finally, you can, if you want to, give a group away to another player. This is useful in making deals. There's no tit-for-tat trading in the game. Basically, on your turn, you can do a favor for somebody, and maybe on their turn, they'll do the favor for you. On top of these regular actions, there's also free actions that you can pretty much do any time. You can, if you want to, give away money or special cards. You can just dump an attached group, you know, throw it into the unattached pile. You can play specials. Once all of that's done, then you can do 2 more money transfers on your turn. So on your turn, if you use your regular actions to do money transfers, plus these 2 additional money transfers, you could do 4 total money transfers on your turn. Maybe not the best use of your turn unless you're really trying to defend yourself, but it's possible. Finally, you can use any of your special powers, whatever those might be. Again, example of that is the Bermuda Triangle. They can rearrange all of their groups at the end of their turn. And that's pretty much it. The game is played until someone meets the base goal of a certain number of control groups, or they meet their special goal. Each Illuminati has a particular special goal. So, for example, the Discordian Society's special goal is to control 5 weird groups. The Servant of Cthulhu's goal is to destroy 8 groups. The Bavarian Illuminati's goal is to control groups of 35 power, including the Illuminati itself. If any of these goals are met at the end of anybody's turn, then the game is over and that person wins. In terms of how you interact with other players, this game has a lot of similarities to Diplomacy, which is probably why I like it. But the alliances are going to be much more fluid. In general, like Diplomacy, you make deals, you screw your neighbor, and you try not to draw too much attention to yourself. If you can, you want to break up networks, other people's networks, as high up as possible. As I said, any groups hanging off the target will also be removed. And in the best case, if you're trying to control, they can become part of your network, along with any money they have. Sometimes you'll want to carry out an attack that may not succeed just to drain down someone's resources. Get rid of all of their money for defense, and then let you or maybe your at least temporary ally take them out. As far as defense, you want to keep your network structure relatively flat. That is, you don't want to have long chains of groups because someone can come in and easily attack them in the middle and just cut off a long piece of that. Also, those groups on the outside are going to be more vulnerable because you don't get those defensive bonuses. You also want to keep money on all of your groups if possible. Remember, you get +2 to defend for every dollar you spend, so it's worth it. And again, like Diplomacy and other games of this ilk, you don't want to obviously be in first, as there is a great tendency to hammer down on the leader or someone who's about to win the game. This is actually, in my opinion, a weakness of the game, and I'm sure a lot of Eurogamers don't like this game for this reason. Someone will rise up as the leader, get beat upon, and then their network broken down by everybody, and then suddenly there's a new leader. Wash, rinse, and repeat. If you're looking for a quick game, This is not it. If you're looking for a game with a clear resolution, this is not it. This is a game of backstabbing. This is a game of beating down the leader and seeing who rises up again. That said, I think it's a lot of fun, as long as you're still talking to your friends the next day. As I mentioned, the original game came out in 1981. There were three expansions for it. The first two added Illuminati and some new groups. The third added a board and some new abilities called brainwashing and propaganda, which involve changing alignment of groups and actually changing the alignment of the world, which I believe is represented by the board. Then in 1987, Steve Jackson Games released Illuminati Deluxe, which was a re-release of the original game along with expansions 1 and 2, and done in nice cards and colorized. This was pretty much all there was until 1999, when the Y2K expansion came out. This added a set of modern group types and two new Illuminati, which is Subgenus and Shangri-La. In 2001, there was Illuminati Brainwash, which was a re-release of Expansion 3, the original Expansion 3. And then Bavarian Fire Drill just came out last year, which adds more new groups and artifacts. At this point, I recommend Illuminati Deluxe, Y2K, and Bavarian Fire Drill. But I probably would pare down the group cards. With all three of those, the deck gets rather large and unwieldy. So, it might be worthwhile to try and pare down some of the groups a little bit. Then again, if you want the most random game possible, you know, you don't want to know what possibilities out there, you could use them all. There are some games out there that are very similar to Illuminati. There's the play-by-mail game, which is currently available from Flying Buffalo. At least I think they're still doing it. There's a game called Hacker, published again by Steve Jackson Games in 1992. This was a response to the raid by the FBI back in, I think, 1990, where they thought that GURPS Cyberpunk was a manual for hacking the government computers. It's very similar to Illuminati, not the same. There's, in fact, one network in the game, and what you're trying to do is hack into that network. There's a collectible card game, Illuminati New World Order, that was published in 1995 and actually won an Origins Award. I should mention that Illuminati also won an Origins Award. As mentioned, it is a collectible card game. I haven't played it, but it seems to be very similar to Illuminati, except that you can pre-plan your deck. There's also Illuminati Crime Lords, which was published in 2004. Again, Steve Jackson Games. Very similar to Illuminati, but this time with a mobster theme. And looking at the cards, it doesn't seem to have the power arrows. And speaking of power, it looks like the lights are flashing. And what is going on? It looks like the power's about to go.
Okay, guys. A lot has happened at the Wandering Geek Podcast the past few months. And we need a short promo to let everyone know about the new web address.
You mean www.wanderinggeek.info?
Yeah, but the old web address still works if they have it bookmarked. The game review shows are new.
Tell them about the music shows.
You'll have to make it clear that you still talk about new and interesting ways that travelers can get their geek on.
And don't forget the interviews with the people that make it happen.
Right. And we still do the news segments.
DVDs, MMOs, and the Geek Buzz.
Show news. And listener feedback, too.
There's even life on the road and skid marks.
Well, that should do it.
Don't forget to tell them they can find it on iTunes.
Just search for Wandering Geek.
So for new, interesting, and convenient ways to get your geek on, listen to
The Wandering Geek Podcast
at wanderinggeek.info.
A member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network.
Great job, guys.
Well, fortunately, I had a battery backup. I don't know what happened there. I mentioned last show that I would not be doing feedback, but this show I'm actually going to do some feedback because I realize I have some from the Tic-Tac-Toe episode I can talk about. First of all, Jeep, I believe that's the Jeep of Abstract Gamer fame, says, "Great interview." Another person on the Vintage Gamer site, Apple Boss, says, "Glad you're back." And Raphael T. sent me a Twitter message. It says, "Just heard the newest Vintage Gamer. Far and away the best episode ever. Beware the day PT, that's the Pink Tornado, is old enough to play Titan. You'll be crushed." You know, I think she probably could crush me now. And finally, a message from Tom. It says, "Hello from a fellow Durham resident. I was surprised and pleased to discover you all are here. This seems to be one of the hotspots for gaming in the nation, which is sweet. Anyway, I just wanted to let you know that I am enjoying the show a lot. I particularly like the Pente and Empire Builder shows and the Tic-Tac-Toe show." Everybody likes the Tic-Tac-Toe show. "I'd like to suggest that the 3M games would be good material for some shows. Keep giving up great reviews of older games." And yes, I have some plans for more 3M games. I think I did cover Acquire. But yeah, there's plenty of other games on the list. I do have a copy of Twixt down in the basement that I need to drag out and try out. And that sound seems to indicate that the black helicopters have shown up outside. So that about wraps up the feedback for this week. If you have feedback on this show or the podcast in general, you can send that via email to vintagejim@gmail.com or chat with me via Skype, username JVSquare, or tweet me at Cthulhu on twitter.com. Or you can leave comments on the website, which is www.thevintagegamer.net, or comment on the forum thread at BoardGameGeek or RPGNet or ConspiracyNet or wherever else I manage to post to, assuming I do once the Men in Black arrive. I will try to respond. Again, assuming I'm ever seen again. Well, this concludes yet another conspiratorial episode of The Vintage Gamer. Our theme is performed by the trio Music of the Spheres and available on the album of the same name at Magnitude.com. Your humble and terrified host is Jim Van Verth. The Vintage Gamer will return, I hope, in a couple of weeks with another game from the past. Until then, please keep trying those new games, but don't forget to play the old ones. Thanks for listening. Fnord.